Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We are talking today, as many people in this country are thinking back to 4 years ago, and the arrival of Hurricane Katrina hitting the Gulf Coast of the United States and literally changing history. We're going to be talking today about what that means. Headlines today, for instance, said such things as the New York Daily News, America forgets Katrina. Katrina now forgotten. New Orleans and Gulf Coast forgotten 4 years later. It made the news today because President Barack Obama said in light of the fourth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, he was going to visit the Gulf Coast sometime this year, which just kind of reminded all the people on the Gulf Coast of what they perceive as a sense of neglect. 4 years after, a Category 4 hurricane hit the coast of the United States. And again, not only changed history, it changed the coastline. We're going to be talking today about what it means and looking back 4 years ago to the arrival of this hurricane and the immense change it really brought in terms of American public life, in terms of what we discovered. Big story this weekend in New York Times Magazine on what took place in Memorial Hospital, where now there is absolutely undeniable evidence that many patients were euthanized. They were literally put to death with a mixture of drugs by medical professionals who just decided they weren't going to be saved. We have been knowing about this story for some time, and yet I was struck today by the knowledge that that used to be the Baptist Hospital. And it was a hospital established by the Southern Baptist Convention. It's just a reminder that history comes back to bite you in some very interesting and often unexpected ways. The phone number for this program, as always, is 877-893-8255. We're going to have three very special guests. Dr. Russell Moore is going to be with us in just a moment, Dean of the School of Theology here and Senior Vice President for Academic Administration, a native of the Gulf Coast. He's going to be talking to us about what happened to his hometown and because his heart is still there, what it's like for the people who are right there on the Mississippi Gulf Coast right now. We're going to go up to Jackson, Mississippi and talk to a pastor, one of my dearest friends, Dr. Ligon Duncan, senior minister of the First Presbyterian Church of Jackson, Mississippi. You know, that far inland, Katrina made a big difference, and it really reshaped Mississippi from its capital city right there in Jackson. We're also going to be talking right at ground zero of the news about Katrina and its aftermath. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Charles Kelly. Chuck Kelly is president of the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, and he and his institution stood bravely in the midst of what went on there. And even now, he is perhaps best positioned to tell us about what's going on the ground in New Orleans 4 years after Katrina. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news. Internationally, the big news is the election that took place over the weekend in Japan, as Japan's long-ruling party, the Liberal Democratic Party, was cast out for only the second time since 1945. This was, in many ways, a history-changing election because the landslide that threw out the party is bringing on a host of changes. Now, we've talked on this program about how elections can really change things. For instance, in Spain, the election of the Zapatero government literally changed the face. You had the secularization of the schools. You had a feminist agenda that was brought in. You had a pro-gay rights, pro-abortion agenda brought right into the heart of Spanish culture. And what we now know is that when those changes come, they are often irreversible. Well, now we have something very similar going on in Japan. The agenda of this new party, known as the Democratic Party, it has come in order to really bring about changes. Here what they're talking about. Number one, there is a feminist agenda here, too. In terms of redefining marriage in Japan so that women can keep their own names before marriage. This is a very interesting thing because in Japan, that has a meaning that goes far beyond even what we're accustomed to here in the United States. Speaking of the United States, another issue is that they have brought in with this new government a pledge to reconsider the presence of American naval and army bases there in Japan. You know, the interesting thing there is that even though it may redefine Tokyo's relationship with Washington, the Japanese Constitution disallows it to have the kind of military presence that the Americans now provide. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes about. And thirdly, and this is the big one, this is what may change Japan more than anything else, this new party has come into power with a pledge to take power away from the bureaucracy. You see, many people in the United States have no idea that Japan's government is far less significant. Its elected government, its diet or parliament, is far less significant than its bureaucracy, because in the years since 1945, the real authority in the government has shifted to bureaucrats. And this has provided cover for elected representatives of the people in Japan, because they can just blame the bureaucracy. Well, this new party has come into power with a pledge to take the power back from the bureaucracy. What some observers think will happen is that this new party, riding that kind of public opinion, will be able actually to force that change, and then Japan will go back to the party it's always had in leadership for the last 60 years. It'll be interesting to see, but nonetheless, this is the world's second largest economy, and we're talking about one of America's major allies. It'll be interesting to watch. The New York Times, big story. Here's the headline. Despite church's push on issues, some bishops assail health plan. It just gets back to what we were talking about Friday, with the complexities of something like an attempt to change health care. What we're talking about here is that the Roman Catholic Church has been avidly for health care reform. But now that the health care reform is in an actual bill being considered in the House of Representatives, many of America's Catholic bishops say this bill is worse than nothing. And it has to do especially with the two issues we focused on Friday last week. And that has to do with the fact that abortion is included in this because it's not specifically excluded. And secondly, when it comes to end-of-life decisions, regardless of what you want to call what this legislation calls for, it calls for external authorities to give guidance as to the allocation of what it calls overutilized medical services in the last 2 years of life. And that's why this particular legislation has hit the iceberg of political reality. And it's interesting here that the Roman Catholic Church, which has thrown its political weight behind reform, is now saying, now that it looks at this bill, several of its bishops are coming back to say, not too fast. If you read the Wall Street Journal on Friday, you saw a very interesting article. Several have written me about it. The headline is Bridging the Gay Evangelical Divide. That's gay hyphen evangelical divide. And the article is by David G. Myers. And this is in the Houses of Worship article that really is looking at what came from the American Psychological Association in recent weeks. A mixed bag, actually, in this report. And we've talked about it already on this program. But this particular social psychologist, David Myers, has come back to say that maybe this promises a new rapprochement or a new peace treaty between gays and evangelicals. And as evidence of this, he cites what he claims are now begrudging acknowledgments on the part of many evangelicals that sexual orientation is not simply chosen. Well, Dr. Myers, let me give you a little piece of advice here. A lot of evangelicals have known that for a long time. We've known it since Genesis 3. And this is another occasion that we need to remind ourselves that evangelicals often misrepresent homosexuality and homosexuals by simply, glibly, superficially, rudely, and crudely suggesting that sexual orientation or sexual desire is simply a matter of personal choice. We know that all kinds of things almost assuredly go into this entire mixture of sexual attraction. But what Dr. Myers in this article fails to recognize, because he cannot do so and reach the conclusion he reaches, is that the real issue is not the origin of those sexual orientation issues, but whether or not they are in themselves acceptable and holy to God. And when it comes to homosexuality, the scripture is very clear. This particular man writes in the Wall Street Journal, he says, on the hand of those who are looking for biblical evidence against homosexuality, he says that the few texts are slim pickings among the Bible's 31,103 verses. Well, again, if you want to gain your understanding of the Bible from a social psychologist, this is where you go, the Wall Street Journal. However, those of you who actually read the Bible are going to know that even though the verses are relatively few, the number is not what's important. The clarity is what's important. And if you really want to help homosexuals, you help them by telling them the truth in Christian love and pointing them to the only remedy, which is Christ. And that's what you do for every single human being. Heterosexual, homosexual, male, female, it matters not the pattern of sin. The reality is that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, and the only remedy for our sin is Christ, period. And when it calls here for bridging the gay evangelical divide, let me tell you what that bridge is. The bridge is Christ. And Christ himself, who is the grace that conquers all of our sin, is the one who also makes very clear that the issue of sexual morality is not only a matter of right and wrong as found in the Old Testament, it's a matter of heart, as he makes clear in the Sermon on the Mount. If you saw the New York Times over the weekend, then you saw what I saw. If you go to the website, you'll see even more. It's a story about Afghan teenagers who've given up on their country and are now flooding into Europe, Greece, Italy, and France in particular. It broke my heart. I'll be honest, as I saw this story and saw the photographs, here you have 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old boys in particular leaving Afghanistan where they see no future and going to Europe because there they believe they can find a new life. They want to go to school. They want to get jobs. They want to live a normal life. When one 15-year-old boy was asked why he came to France, he drew a picture of two things, an apple and a banana. If that doesn't break your heart, I don't know what does. Folks, there's a lot of brokenness in this world. We're not here merely to observe it. But it does break our hearts. Go hug your kids and come back for the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. 4 years ago, we were all riveted to our television sets. We were staring at the screen as the images unfolded from New Orleans. The morning after Katrina and the landfall of that Category 4 hurricane brought America to a whole new realization of what a natural disaster could look like in the United States. But we had never had, in terms of living memory, and given the scale of urbanization in the United States, we'd never had ever the kind of disaster that really took place there. One of America's largest cities almost literally dismembered by a hurricane. The waters of the Gulf came in, the winds blew, and what was left was a very changed America. But it wasn't just New Orleans. It was also the Mississippi Gulf Coast and beyond. In the studio today is one of our favorite people on this program, guest host and friend, Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology and Senior Vice President for Academic Administration here at Southern Seminary, familiar to you all, and of course also a native of Gulfport, Mississippi. Russ, what is it like 4 years later to look back?
Well, the first thing that strikes me is going home, and previously I would go home and I would see all of my familiar places that I had been, place where I met my wife, place where I asked her to marry me, place where I grew up running up and down the beach. All that's changed. The whole landscape is gone, and all of those old antebellum homes are gone and replaced with just more casinos and more strip malls and that kind of thing. But then at a deeper level, There seems to be a spiritual hardening in many ways. There's a roughness that has come in the aftermath of Katrina from people who have seen things I don't think they ever thought they would see. And for some of them, that means growing closer to the Lord. And for others of them, it means a kind of callousness that troubles me.
Describe the scale of all this for us. You know, you're talking about Gulfport. That's a city of some 100,000 people.
About 60,000, 70,000 people, and then Biloxi right next to it, which is the same thing. When I first went, and of course we watched it all from Louisville on CNN, trying to call my parents and grandparents who were all there through it all, and then going home after having seen all the televised images and driving down the beach, a place that I knew I could go blindfolded, and I couldn't even recognize where I was because it was like Hiroshima. It was the most distressing moment of my life to get out of the car and watch all of that. And then to go to my grandparents' homes where we'd grown up all of our lives, they're all gone, just completely gone. You don't even know where you are. And there were so many people who experienced that. It'd be one thing if it were one family or two families, but when everybody you know has experienced that exact same thing at the same time, it brings a gripping view of the darkness of reality in a fallen world.
Now, let's talk about that for a moment. You know, this was indiscriminate damage. I mean, after all, this was a Category 4 hurricane, Category 5 at one point.
Right.
But by the time it hit landfall, Category 4, immense destructive power. It destroyed casinos. It also destroyed churches.
It destroyed churches. It destroyed the homes of some of the godliest and most faithful people. The lady who is, humanly speaking, responsible for leading me to faith in Christ had everything she owns completely destroyed. And then you had others who were, strip club operators who managed to survive. So simply coming in saying, well, this is an issue of God judging this particular part and not judging this other part, which is the case with, I mean, New Orleans as well. The Baptist Seminary, the homeless shelters, all done away with, while the French Quarter was relatively unharmed.
4 years later, look back. And I'll tell you that I grew up in Florida. We had hurricanes, and Florida's had some really deadly hurricanes, Hurricane Andrew in particular and all the rest. But, you know, most Americans think, all right, it's in the headlines now. A year later, it's all cleaned up and basically ready for action. Mm-hmm. But the Gulf Coast is still horribly altered by the storm.
It is. And I think most people think around the country think of New Orleans only when they think of Katrina, because New Orleans is where you had riots and you had the National Guard coming in and so forth in such a way. Really, the Mississippi Gulf Coast is hit in many ways harder than New Orleans was. It was where the brunt of the storm came in. There's just fewer people there. And so both New Orleans and, as an urban reality, and the coast as a rural suburban reality, both are in need of continued work and continued prayer. And I do think there are many people who have forgotten it. You're mentioning about Barack Obama. Both President Bush and President Obama have failed to do what President Nixon did after another great hurricane there, Hurricane Camille, in which he came and stood on the beach right after the devastation and said, "You'll come back and I'll come back when you do." And he did, and the people stood with him through all of that. I think that's a lesson that I'm surprised more leaders haven't learned.
Yeah, especially after the failure, it was widely perceived, of the Bush administration. Yeah. I think by any measure of leadership,
exactly,
it was a pure misreading of the situation and a failure of presidential,
yeah,
leadership that should have rallied the nation,
right,
and as well as the people of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. But you would think that now others would learn. And I was stunned this morning to see the statement where President Obama said, "I'll come sometime this year."
Yeah, I know. I don't know who is advising him to do that, or whoever advised President Bush, fly over in a plane and look out at the people.
Right.
That's not the way to go.
No, and especially when we know what was going on the ground. And you know, one of the things that humbles me, Russ, when I think about this is that it took days for most of us to realize, mm-hmm, what was really going on here. I go back to my thoughts on the day after Katrina, mm-hmm, hit. You think, okay, lots of building damage, incredible flood damage, mm-hmm, but the people are okay. And then we found out in this case, the people were not okay.
It was a week before I knew whether or not my parents were alive or dead. 5 days of just, because no one could get there. There was no telephone contact, and I did not know if they were living or dead for 5 days. And you don't expect to be in that situation in 21st century America.
No, not hardly. If you look at the Gulf Coast now, spiritually, what's your greatest concern?
My greatest concern is that there are gospel-preaching pastors on the Gulf Coast who are willing to stay. One of the great disappointments to me was the fact that you had so many people who just left after Katrina, pastors and others who were just gone. And some of my heroes on the Gulf Coast are those pastors who stayed and ministered to the people in the aftermath of Katrina and who are a gospel presence. There's so much despair. There's so much hardness there right now that having preachers and leaders who are there willing to say, just to give the gospel message of hope in Christ is what we should be praying for most of all. Because you can rebuild the coast and you can rebuild New Orleans. You can do all of those things. But if you don't address the underlying despair that only the gospel can address, you've not really done it.
1,836 people are known to have lost their lives.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, that's just on a scale far outside our imagination. That's along with the death toll of 9/11.
And that's not even counting all the people. I know so many people who died later from heart attacks and other things that happened in the aftermath.
And a lack of medical care after so many of the facilities were destroyed.
Right, exactly.
You know, looking back at your experience there on the Gulf Coast and looking now, what would you say to America in the year 2009? What is it that Christians in America should be thinking, praying, and doing now?
Well, I think there are a lot of Christians who are still doing things. I'll tell you, when I go home and talk to some of the just really pagan people I grew up with, they'll mention, they know, people who don't know anything about church, they know people like North Carolina Baptist Men. You know, because they know those
disaster
are the groups
relief
that were there,
yeah,
doing disaster,
right,
relief. And I think that kind of thing, praying for those seeds that were planted to continue, yeah, to bear fruit, is really significant.
I think about ministries like Desire Street Ministries,
mm-hmm,
you know, going back into the inner city of,
yeah,
New Orleans, just as we hope more people will. Because,
absolutely,
one of the things we're going to find out when we talk to Dr. Chuck Kelly, president of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, in just a few moments, is that New Orleans is still, in terms of its population, a long way from where,
absolutely,
it was before Katrina. And the real question is, how do we in America in the year 2009, in the 21st century, rebuild a city? We've really not had to answer that question before, but we do now. 4 years later, we're taking stock, looking back at Katrina. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It was on August 23, 2005, that a tropical depression was spotted over the Bahamas, fairly far in the western Atlantic. Within 9 hours after reaching Category 3 status, as a hurricane, it reached Category 5 status, hit the Gulf Coast of the United States as a Category 4 hurricane with sustained winds of 175 miles per hour. The death toll is known to have been at least 1,836 people. The federal disaster area covered 90,000 square miles, which is almost the size of Great Britain. 4 years later, we simply do not remember enough about Katrina, and we've got to make sure it doesn't slip from our minds. One of my friends to help us with that is Dr. Charles S. Kelly. Dr. Chuck Kelly is president of the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. And Chuck, I have to say, you gave this entire nation an example of bravery and tenacity in the aftermath of Katrina. Welcome.
We were just a living illustration of the grace of God, Dr. Mohler. It was really something to see what he did to redeem this incredible situation.
Well, tell me about the day. When you woke up after Katrina hit, were you shocked?
Shocked is the mildest possible expression to use. Sitting on the end of a bed in a hotel room in Birmingham, Alabama, and seeing your entire city underwater, watching on the news as a helicopter would fly by the campus and show it, two-thirds of it completely underwater, all the housing where students and faculty live completely underwater, was just devastating.
Now, 4 years later, tell us about both the school and the city.
Well, thank you so much for your interest and for reminding people of what happened here. Our seminary is doing very well. We had over 3,600 students again last year. We never dropped below 3,000 students, which I think is something of a miracle. Almost everything has been done. Our one big remaining need is replacing 92 apartments that we lost. Everything else looks like it's in pristine condition. We actually have people come on our campus now and ask us how we managed to be undamaged by the storm, which makes us want to laugh. But the seminary is doing well. The city is making recovery. It's just a very long, slow process. We still have tens of thousands of homes that have not been rebuilt or fixed, and lots of needs in the city, but very definite progress. A tourist coming to New Orleans would have virtually no idea that the storm hit. Everything in tourist New Orleans is pretty much back to normal.
Well, what about the rest of the city? Talk to me about the spiritual condition and the challenge to evangelicals there in New Orleans.
The best word to use is openness. What Katrina created, no, not Katrina created, what the church created by its response to Katrina, to Katrina, is an unprecedented opportunity of openness to the gospel. Having lived in this city for 34 years, it is very striking. Evangelical Christianity has always had an uphill slog trying to make progress in the city of New Orleans. But the church responded with such compassion, such tenderness, such love. They not only worked hard, but they were very gentle in their interactions with people, and they shared Jesus in very powerful, tender ways with the population. And so it has created an openness to the gospel that, frankly, I have never seen before in New Orleans. It is a great day of opportunity for the Church of Jesus Christ in this city.
All right, that's great to hear. Now, help America's evangelicals understand right now, what is the opportunity right now? I'm so thankful that there were believers there on the ground, disaster relief and those doing help. In the year 2009, how can America's churches and Christians respond in helpful ways?
Well, number one, we still have a lot of work of rebuilding that needs to get done. It's going to be a 10 to 15 year process. So anyone that can come and work in the area of recovery, particularly with skills, is very important. Secondly, financial assistance for a lot of the churches is still very important. We still have churches that do not have their worship centers back online and things like that. Third, people might pray about coming to New Orleans to live and to work. We are seeing an influx, particularly of young professionals who are coming to the city who want to be a part of creating something from scratch, and that is exciting to watch that happen. Several of our local universities have the largest number of applicants that they've ever had in the history of the schools. of young people wanting to come and be a part of what's happening here. So people might consider coming to New Orleans and planting their life and just finding a neighborhood, finding a place, and making a difference. A fourth way is, of course, to pray. As I said, this is a very challenging environment, but is one that's ripe with opportunity. So to pray that God will give our pastors and Christian leaders the right vision for this time, that he will give them continuing strength going day after day.
Yes.
And just pray for that harvest that is to come.
Many thanks to Dr. Chuck Kelly, President of New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. You know, folks, you heard what he said. What a difference it would make if that city were to be now flooded with evangelical Christians moving in to live there, to bear witness by making a difference. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back. By the time we really saw what was going on the Gulf Coast and there in the Southland region and in the city of New Orleans, the devastation was beyond our calculation. As a matter of fact, the preliminary damage estimates are well over $100 billion, and the aftermath financially is going to be far more than that. But the aftermath financially is only a part of the picture and not the most important part. The spiritual impact of this storm, the cultural legacy it leaves behind, the way it changed America in that region, that's our conversation today. My conversation partner right now is Dr. Ligon Duncan, my dear friend, pastor and senior minister of the First Presbyterian Church of Jackson, Mississippi. And as Ligon Duncan was there ministering during those days, I was desperate to get to him and make sure that he and his church and others were doing well, and he was ground zero right there in Jackson, Mississippi for a lot of what was going on in terms of mobilization. Lig, welcome to the program.
It's a delight to be with you today, Al.
When I think back to 4 years ago, I remember just wondering in the aftermath if human eyes had ever seen anything like this before. And you and I know that the scale of this disaster, you know, is what really has emblazoned the name Katrina forever in the American mind.
It really has. And, you know, Governor Barbour got criticized for saying when he first went down to the Mississippi Gulf Coast that it looked like what it must have looked like in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But as the cameras came in, it was very apparent that he was not overstating, but in fact, very carefully and realistically, maybe even understating the case. I flew in with engineers who told me that the area of damage was as large as the state of Kansas, and that of the structures that existed on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, 25% of them remained viable after the storm had come in. It's devastation on a scale that I've never experienced in my life.
80% of the geographical bowl that is New Orleans was underwater, and underwater, deep water, for some time. Trace the damage, Lig, from the Gulf Coast up as far north as Jackson and your area of the country.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling to me. And as I mean, Al, you were one of the first ones, maybe the first one, to get in touch with me while you're pastoring the rest of evangelicalism. You're checking on us in Jackson, so I'll never ever forget that. I'm profoundly thankful for it. But when you called, if you'd called 2 days before, I would have thought there's no way this thing is going to hit us 3 hours inland. Like it hit us, but there were parts of Jackson without power for 2 weeks. We were at my home, we were without power for 8 days. Their gas supplies were interrupted. I sent Ann and the children out of state because I knew I was going to be working around the clock with especially a lot of our vulnerable elderly. The heat was absolutely oppressive and the humidity was worse. And we knew we had people that were really vulnerable to heat exhaustion and such. And so there was, the damage, especially down in the Hattiesburg area, was still catastrophic, and it was serious damage here in Jackson with everything being disrupted. We had to have our worship services outside that Sunday afternoon. We had no power at the church. The playground of the church facility was filled that Sunday morning. It was a glorious morning. I'll never forget it.
Now, what about the spiritual legacy of Katrina? As a pastor, looking at your region and looking back, how do you take its measure?
A couple of things. It is true that a lot of times disasters come and there's a quick spiritual change and then it fades quickly. But I want to say a couple of things. One is, Al, on behalf of all of us here in Mississippi, nobody did more for us than the Southern Baptists. We love what the Salvation Army did and the Red Cross did and so many other agencies. One of my deacons was coordinating with the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency, and all of these organizations did amazing things for us. Nobody did more for us than the Southern Baptists. I mean, wow. In a split second, there were Baptists from North Carolina with chainsaws down there cutting down trees and helping us out, and that, I believe, had a tremendous spiritual effect that remains today on the Gulf Coast. You will know this because of your dear friend and colleague, Russell Moore. The Gulf Coast has been some tough ground for the gospel in years past, and I believe that the response of Christians in the wake of Katrina was used by God to open hearts. And I know the brothers in Pascagoula and Gulfport can testify to that. One of my students had gone into pastor in Gulfport. He had just been called to be the minister. A week before he was to arrive, Katrina hit. He had no facility left, and he had no idea whether he was going to have a congregation. And he decided he was going to go and pastor whatever the remnants of that church were anyway, even though he had every seminary in America asking him to come teach. And he has seen gospel fruit there. And I know you've seen brothers in Baptist churches all along the coast seeing gospel fruit come out of this. So it's a testimony to how the Lord will use dark providences to glorify Christ.
Now, that's exactly where I want to head, Lig. And this is the most important issue for this program, is not just reviewing the last 4 years and looking back at the damage, but let's talk theology here. What does Katrina mean? When people ask you, how could this have happened, as a pastor, how do you respond?
Well, you know, I love the responses of so many pastors that were asked by reporters, were you asking God why? Where was God when Katrina hit? And I love the answers of the pastors who said he was right where he was when he was delivering up his son on the cross to die for our sins. He was reigning over the universe, and he has good purposes for his people and gospel purposes for the whole world, even in these disasters, and especially in these disasters. And the book of Job is so clear about that, and Genesis is so clear about that, and the whole Bible is so clear about that. So I saw Christians who had literally lost everything cling to that like light and life and hope in their darkest hours. Because I literally had family. I had a former elder that had moved to the coast, moved to Diamond Head. He got down there. It was his retirement. He'd been a doctor. He'd been a faithful Christian all his life, serving the congregation. He lost absolutely everything from a material financial standpoint, all the mementos of his life, his china, his silver, the pictures of his grandchildren and children, lost it all. And he'll tell you that in that time he learned that the only thing that you can't be taken away from you is the Lord Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And
keyword.
How do you even begin to describe that kind of an experience?
Well, this is when you find out whether you believe in God or not. And in a very particular way, whether you believe in a sovereign, omnipotent, loving, providential God or not. Never fails to have a gospel word. It's great to have my guest, Ligon Duncan, with us today. We come back. Final reflections on Katrina 4 years later. Out of sight and out of mind. We can't let it be so. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. A couple of second thoughts just about Katrina here as we close. First of all, there's a headline in the New York Times today. In New Orleans, recovery is not enough. Interesting headline. And I thought I'd better look and see what that's all about. It's about the fact that even though there can be financial recovery, economic recovery, a construction recovery, and all the rest, the reality is that if you're going to have a new, flourishing, functioning New Orleans, there's got to be a whole lot more than that. And, it's looking at cultural and the kinds of things that you would be talking about in terms of bringing a city a new reputation. Well, I'm not so interested in the cultural dimensions. I'm interested in the spiritual dimensions. Yes, recovery is not enough. What we know now is that New Orleans was before Katrina, was during Katrina and is now an incredible mission field. I want to go back to what my colleague Chuck Kelly said. What a difference it would make if thousands of evangelical Christians said, let's just move in and make a difference. Doctors, lawyers, accountants, plumbers, make a big difference. Rarely is there an opportunity to move back into a city and take it over. And for Christians to do that in a way that shows the grace and mercy of Christ could only be precious. On the downside, if you saw the magazine, the New York Times magazine on Sunday, you now know that much of what we feared in the aftermath of Katrina was true. Incontrovertible coverage that mercy killings were going on by the multiples, especially in Memorial Hospital there in New Orleans, a huge ethical challenge, a reminder to us that this kind of extremity that comes out in the midst of a disaster can bring out the best and the worst. It can bring out the healer. It can bring out the killer. It can bring out the one who defends the defenseless and the one who decides to loot and rob and steal. It can bring out nobility, and it can bring out fear and desperation and horribly immoral, evil deeds. This is a challenge to the American medical community. It's a challenge to biomedical ethics. It's a challenge to all of us to remember that what we find out about ourselves as a community, as a nation, as a civilization, as individuals, what we find out about ourselves in a time of distress and the extremes of this kind of disaster is not something new. It's what was there all along. This is a big revelation. America found out a lot about itself 4 years ago with Hurricane Katrina's arrival and aftermath. We're going to find out a whole lot about ourselves, about New Orleans, the Gulf Coast, and beyond in the years to come. Will we look back 20 years from now and say that we missed an opportunity to make a big difference? Time will tell. God will judge. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.